Hello!
Hello! It's like the uncertain opening.
Yes.
Welcome to Movie Banter.
I'm Paul Carenza.
I'm John Sands.
And I'm Jennifer Masters. Hello!
You always say hello. Why don't you? Why do you say hello and we never
like, why are you like, so special?
Like is your name Jennifer Masters Hello?
Yes. It is.
Yeah. That explains it.
It's like a nice bookend a nice to the names.
Yeah, I suppose it is, isn't it? Really?
Sure.
Yeah, fair enough. I won't mock you for being polite to the listener.
Well, that means that the ending bookend is far smaller than the opening bookend. All the books will fall over.
Yeah. Wow. Alongside a shelf. Welcome to the episode, and this week we have off some films to talk about.
Do we have some films? There are some films.
We have
new Mel Gibson thriller, Edge of Darkness.
Edge of Darkness.
We've got 44-inch chest, which is a British gangstery thing.
Yep.
We've got Vampiricness.
Daybreakers, which is also about the Edge of Darkness.
Yeah, true.
Yes.
Well, you go right over the edge and full into the darkness.
Exactly.
And we've got Up in the Air.
Up in the Air, oh yes.
And
which is also about the Edge of Darkness, because it's where the sun is up in the air, is the edge of...
Stop now. and that may be it.
Okay.
Possibly, film-wise. Yeah. I think that's more or less it.
I think it is.
It's quite a lot.
It's plenty, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm.
Plus your emails, your tweets.
Oh, yes.
And everything else. Oh,
this week in movie history.
Yeah.
Desert Island Flicks.
It's going to be a smorgasbord. A cornucopia. Is that the right word? I've no idea.
It sounds like it should be.
It sounds like it should be, yes. So, good. We should probably start then, shall we?
We should.
Enough of this, shenanigans.
This banter.
This podcast just... foreplay.
Basically, isn't it?
Let's get down to business.
What are you expecting to happen there?
The business of film.
Your wife is a lucky woman.
I'm really quite scared.
That's just... Oh, I've suddenly had an appalling...
I've got my tea. I'm happy.
A horrible mental image into your home love life. Enough of the problem. Hey, let's get out of business. I've got my tea.
Let's talk about some films.
Okay. Let's talk about Mel Gibson.
Indeed. So Mel Gibson, he's in a film, isn't he?
Yes, Edge of Darkness, which is, I think, the big new release this week.
I think it
really
is. Yeah, yeah.
Mel Gibson's first film for 8 years.
Eight years?
It's almost like we rehearsed that, except
we
didn't.
A script, haven't we?
Because why? Because frankly, why would we?
Indeed.
Is yeah.
it that long, really? Because what was his last one? Because he did Payback in that lot, was it?
Or? No, Payback was 1999. Signs was 2002.
Signs?
Yes. Yeah. I never saw that.
It was alright.
It's alright. It's M. Night Shyamalan's latest, latest. It was latest at the time.
Yes. Was it? Yeah, was it?
Well, all films.
I can't remember if it was Unbreakable before or after Signs.
Mm. Unbreakable before, and I think Signs was his third big one anyway.
Yeah,
and then he
went properly off the rails.
It's been downhill since then, really. So,
I mean, the science is watchable, but it was. I mean, aliens who are afraid of water and yet come to a planet that's 80% water. Well, ish.
Yeah,
that lost me. Yeah.
So, what has he been doing then?
Partly directing and partly trying to claw back some PR after his drunken anti-Semitic
rant. He's been getting drunk. That's what he's been doing.
Well, yes.
There was the quote at the Golden Globes when Ricky Gervais. Introducing Mel Gibson to have to present an award by saying, Ricky just walks on with a large glass of whiskey with his tie off, saying, "I like a drink as much as the next man, unless the next man is Mel Gibson." And on walks Mel, yes. Trying to claw back some dignity.
Yes. But apparently he isn't drinking anymore, or at least he's hiding it better.
He's still being anti-Semitic.
Well, yes, there was that's still a bit of a cloud hanging over. Except much like Tom Cruise, who is on some levels a bit of a nutter.
Yeah.
I wouldn't normally be as delicate as that, but yeah, this is vaguely publicly broadcast.
Oh, yeah, he's not awesome.
But I still find it very watchable. And I think the same is true of Mel Gibson, in that he may have had a drunken anti-Semitic rant, but I can sort of separate that and think, he may not be the nicest man in the world, but you can still watch him.
He's
on
a good
actor.
You've
got to have a bit of nutter quality, haven't you, to be a superstar, I think, really.
Well,
you
true.
Know, they go off, you know. Yeah. It's a weird world they live in, so they might as well.
Well, Jane, you're an actress. Are you a nutter?
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit. I'd be more of a nutter if I was, more famous, obviously.
No, that's true. Oh, dear. In which case, in the nicest possible way, I hope you don't get more famous. Otherwise, it'll be a lookout for humanity.
Indeed.
Jen just left the room now. Oh, no, sorry. She's shutting the door.
Sorry.
Anyway, but all of this is diversion up to Mel Gibson's latest film.
Yes.
Which is based on a British miniseries from about 20 years ago, which is all about a policeman whose daughter gets killed and then he gets... He realised that she worked for someone... I think the British version worked in the nuclear power industry and she was trying to cover something up. In this one, it's Americanised and she works for an American nuclear... Not a nuclear weapons company, but they kind of store nuclear materials.
They keep on saying, it's not weapons.
It's not weapons, but we store nuclear materials for the government, and then there's a lot more going on.
Yeah.
And it all gets uncovered. And it's a weird one. It's very slow. Mm-hmm. It's deliberately slow.
Yes.
I thought.
Yes.
Except, actually, the very beginning, which does, much like the Gerard Butler, Law Abiding Citizen.
Oh, yeah.
Does the same good job there. Because even, it arguably starts almost quicker than the trailer. Because in the trailer, you see him shaving, and his daughter saying, or answering a message saying, oh, I'm going to come home for a few days, he meets her. And the film starts almost exactly like that, except without even the answer message. He just picks her up from the station, takes her home, she gets shot.
Well, I walked in a bit late, and I walked in as she was being shot.
Oh, I see.
So I missed the entire...
No. Oh, you missed literally about a minute.
Well, exactly. I thought, it's like I've seen the trailer a couple of times, because I can recall the bits that's from. But yeah. They didn't muck about.
No, except but that's the thing, but the him shaving is actually later in the film, as you would have seen. And there is no answer by message. It's just sort of him at the station.
Yeah.
So they sort of pieced it together to pad out.
There probably
more
is
the beginning.
More of it in the trailer than in the film, which is odd.
But I like films that do that.
Just get on with it.
As in, there's no point building up 20 minutes of father-daughter relationships, because we know she's going to get shot. We're not going to be invested too much, so we might as well kill her and get on with it. that's an insight to my foreplay.
Oh, dear.
I'm really worried now.
Well, yes. Anyway. But then from there, it's just got a relatively slow story about him trying to work out what she was involved with. Was she the target? Who were her friends? And we're slowly uncovering piece by piece what she was involved with and why someone might have wanted to kill her.
That's one thing that they did, that, like you say, you like it when they just get on with it.
Mm.
What I did wish they got on with a little bit more was they spent about half an hour, fanny-arsing her around. This whole thing of, oh, well, it's Mel Gibson, you were the target, weren't you? And she wasn't the target.
Yeah.
And then eventually go, oh, but you, maybe she was the target. And I thought, we've all seen the trailer. and even if you haven't seen the trailer, you can work out from the film language they're using.
Yeah.
Mm. This whole thing of him going, oh, but it must have been me thereafter, and she was the innocent bystander. Why would they want to kill me?
Mm.
In the meantime, he's looking into her dodgy dealings in this nuclear company. And as soon as you start doing that, you know the entire thing's...
Yeah.
It's meant to be about her, and so I wish that they didn't have that half hour.
No, true.
So when you're saying that it's kind of like slow, is it slow and yet interesting and insightful?
Well, this
or is
thing,
it just
I found it quite interesting because the pace of revelations is just about good enough that you keep sort of different twists and turns get unveiled.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was wrapped and completely engaged, but I was interested enough in where the film was going that I never found it slow and boring. But I saw it with two other guys. One of them. Thought like I did and sort of enjoyed it, but said, it was a bit slow, but it was still watchable.
Uh-huh.
The other one hated it, absolutely hated it.
Oh, right.
It was slow and boring and tedious and awful and nearly walked out. Hmm. So it's not, it'll be slightly divisive.
Yeah.
I think you need to know that you're going into a slow film and be prepared for that,
well,
and then
true.
You'll probably
yeah.
find it quite interesting.
Because I think the trailer was a bit deceptive.
Oh, yeah, because all of the action
all
is
of the
crammed
action
into the trailer.
I was watching it thinking, oh, we're going to see another Mel Gibson, like, ransom, payback sort of
thing. Yeah. Gunfight smashing
yeah,
through the
there.
Window, power off the edge.
I thought it actually seemed quite generic from that trailer.
Yeah, exactly. I was there thinking, okay, we're going to be a big chase thing after the bad guys, that sort of thing. But it's a very deceptive trailer, which I think does the film harm, because actually, when you watch it, I felt it was a lot like sort of the old Humphrey Bogart films. It felt very much like... But I did come away thinking... Okay, if you'd like this sort of film, if you've seen things like The Big Sleep, The Maltese Falcon, those sort of things.
Yeah, so a man trying to get answers rather than a man trying to get revenge.
Yeah, so it's lots of two-person scenes of him going in, and there's some wisecrack and some enigmatic talking from this government person, or this an employee who says, you've got to go, I can't be seen talking to you. There's lots of that. And then next scene, I'll go and speak to the lawyer. And then that's lots of two-person dialogue scenes. But I think if you want to see something like that, I'd just say go and see The Big Sleep or Maltese Falcon.
Yeah.
I think the last film that did what that did well was Chinatown with Jack Nicholson in the 70s.
Yeah, that's true.
Because that was, again, really well, good version of that. Sort of quite, again, slow, slow pace and all that. But, again, gripping at the same time.
Mm.
I didn't think Edge of Darkness was gripping, though. I think it had a story if you could be bothered to pay attention to it. But I just lost interest.
It is quite convoluted.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't lose interest, but I can entirely I'm not nor am I going to really defend it, say, no, but it's fascinating, because it's not fascinating, but it is, the interest is there, but you've got to kind of work at it, and it doesn't make it easy to work for it.
Yeah.
And I think I was just feeling in a good mood and so thought, okay, I'll give it the benefit of the doubt.
And I think, like all those films, they live and die largely by the actors, and also by probably by the direction as well, really. And I didn't think the director was interesting enough. Lots of just...
No, I expected, because it's Martin Campbell who boring. Did Casino Royale and others.
Yeah.
And I was expecting a bit more from him.
It's really just cut to close-up of that person, cut to close-up of that person. Nothing interesting happened.
Mm.
And acting-wise, you know, Mel Gibson was good. I mean, he's. I think if it was someone else, it wouldn't have been interesting.
Yeah.
But that's why the Humphrey Bogart films work, because Humphrey Bogart is a brilliant person to watch on the screen. Similarly, in this one, a lot of the people in the scenes with Mel Gibson... Like Danny Houston, who played the corrupt boss.
Yes, I think if he'd had more to do, it could have been more interesting than a man on man.
Yeah.
But he's almost incidental. He's just a bit of a nutter.
I thought I knew sniggering a man on man there. Shocking.
Oh dear.
Shocking. Exactly your foreplay.
See, this starts off terribly on the foreplay. Frankly, now you're coming off best.
I think so. Excuse me. So, I think Danny Houston was.
Can you remind me
who
Danny Houston is again?
He played Brian Cox in Wolverine, if that makes sense. It won't. The character that Brian Cox played in X-Men 2, in which case you're not going to help. He was in Wolverine.
He's a character actor. He's in a bunch of films.
Okay.
Yes. In particularly the last about 5-10 years.
Okay.
I think he's the daughter of Angelica Houston, son of Angelica son Houston. Of, he's not daughter of...
No. He's son of John Houston.
Son of John Houston,
I think.
Which would
was John him... Houston in Chinatown?
John Houston was the director, whose daughter is Angelica Houston. So that would make Danny Houston Angelica Houston's brother, if he's the son.
Right.
I'll look it up.
Okay.
I'm just going because in Roger Ebert's review of this, he made some reference to Danny Houston saying, "Oh, he was just as slimy as his father was in Chinatown," or something like that.
Oh.
And I thought, all right, so looked up. And just called up him on the IMDb. And based on, in fact, well, Paul's just looking at it now, based on the photo of him on the IMDb at the top left, I just thought, hang on, he's not Jack Nicholson's son, is he? Because he kind of looks like he could be.
He does look a bit.
And I thought, what, but was Jack Nicholson slimy in Chinatown? Sort of. And then looked up and thought, ah, no, he was talking about, oh, he is a son of John Houston.
Son of John, half-brother of Angelica, grandson of Walter Houston, and father of Whitney Houston. That's not true. An owner of Houston.
Okay.
But but he didn't have enough to do, I thought. I thought he could have been a convincing mastermind bad guy at the root of it all. And he's sort of... I won't go into it in depth or give anything away, but it's revealed quite early on that he's a bit of a bad guy. But it was all a little bit too muddled, which is actually sort of the point, because there's also Ray Winston plays a character who kind of gets called in to sort out the mess, and we don't really know which side he's on. And he was quite interesting, sort of added a bit of a interesting dimension to it.
Yeah.
But the point that he makes is essentially his character, he's meant to muddy the waters. He gets brought in by people to make a story. Well, there's an unfortunate parallel for the film, because his character is meant to be someone who gets brought in to make a story so convoluted that no one can follow it,
right.
So people can get away with stuff. And that's sort of what the film ends up being, to a little bit of a degree. There are various people, you're not entirely sure what they were doing or how they were involved.
No, it's just a bit messy, really.
Which is sort of deliberate, but at the same time, it's sort of irritating. So,
and particularly, again, I think just based on the trailer, if you go in expecting a thriller...
I think people were probably expecting a revenge kind of Taken-esque.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Going back and shoot my way through people. And it's
and
really
particularly
not
given
like
Mel Gibson's history of payback and ransom and things like that, you'd think that might be it. But it ain't.
No.
Sean Jacks tweeted, Edge of Darkness, typical revenge film, nothing special, last hour drags a bit, 3 out of 5.
Yeah, and it's only a 2-hour film.
Well, there you are.
But, yeah, that's it. I think 3 out of 5 is probably fair enough, on average, across different viewings. In that it doesn't mean it's awful, but it definitely won't be to everyone's taste.
Yeah.
So just be aware it's not going to be a big action film.
Buyer beware, I think is,
yes.
Is
yeah,
the,
I think
the headline
so.
For this
it's
one.
There is stuff to like in it, but you need to know what you're getting into.
Indeed,
But anyway,
good.
That's your Mel for the moment.
Yeah, Sean Jacks also he saw a film that I was going to see on the weekend and failed to, which is Armoured. And Sean says, we'll get his review because we haven't seen it.
What for?
Boring, predictable, misspelt B-movie. 2 out of 5.
Nah.
Armoured, because of course I haven't got the U.
Yeah. Yeah. These Americans, their crazy ways. Because isn't it? Because it's a heist film about an armored car, isn't it? Is it Lawrence Fishburne?
Yeah, that's right. Lawrence Fishburne
and someone else.
Quite a good cast actually.
It looked quite entertaining. But yes, it did look like it could be a B movie.
Yeah.
And from the sound of it, not a good B movie,
no.
Which isn't. And that pretty much makes it a D movie.
It's quite
a little bit. Yeah. I did a bit of cinema hopping this weekend. I won't go into the full details of my weekend.
Oh.
But
it was awful.
It was
just. Yeah, I had a weekend up in Manchester and had two gigs that I couldn't make because my car broke down twice. And £1,000 worth of damage to the engine and £500 to get the car back from Manchester to Guildford because my RAC membership was invalid.
Ah.
So I basically spent £1,500 to go to the cinema three times. So was Edge of Darkness worth £500?
Was it?
No.
No.
No, definitely not.
No, it's not.
And I look forward to answering the same question later about Daybreakers, which we shall review shortly.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the Book of Eli was the other one I saw. Which,
oh, yes.
Yeah, just a well, we've already covered it. But I thought it was quite good.
Oh, really? I was intrigued as to where you'd stand on it, throwing the religion into the mix.
I thought it was quite good, and didn't see the ending coming. I thought it was quite interesting.
It does sort of make no sense.
It's divided some people. Some people thought, oh, a ridiculous ending. But
I don't think it is ridiculous, but it's almost ridiculous, but in a sort of interesting way.
Don't say what it is.
I'm not going to.
I want to
credits.
See it.
There are names appear and
names.
Jobs they did in the film.
Yeah,
no,
it's
I love
terrible.
That.
It's amazing.
It's great.
Yes, but no, because like, you can double. You sort of go, oh, and yet also, nah, but yes. Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Okay. We haven't told you what it was. Trust me. You, yeah.
Although I did read a review, the Times review of it, really slagged it off. Just said it's like someone thought, I'll make a version of The Road, but rubbish. Which I think is succinct.
Sort of. It's a more populist version of The Road.
It is, yeah.
But then less populist because it gets a bit religious.
Well, true. But,
but then I think various reviews have said, oh, it's like being preached at. And I thought,
I don't think it is.
It really isn't.
I think that misses the point, really. The religion part of it isn't.
No,
I don't
it could almost be about any book rather than the Bible.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think anyone who says, oh, it's like being preached at for 2 hours. Is quite anti-religious, or is they're kind of defaulting to a position without actually having
thought
it through.
That's the sort of person who, as soon as they hear the word God or religion, go, ah, la, la,
yeah,
la,
stop
la,
preaching
la,
about
la,
things. Well, that wasn't really a point.
Of just swearing.
Exactly.
So, you never know. But I also saw 44-inch Chest a week ago, and which features Ray Winston from...
Edge of Darkness,
that's the film. Forgotten already, it's that forgettable. Now this is a British gangster film, and it's Ray Winston is the lead role in it. He's a guy who's found out his wife has had an affair.
Ooh.
And but he's a bit of an old school London geezer, a bit of a gangster, sort of. They never really touch on exactly how much of wrongdoers or criminals these guys are in the film.
Right.
They could be just talking the talk. Do they walk the walk? We don't know. I suspect not, actually.
Right.
But the film really plays out like a play. It's in one room, the entire film, pretty much.
Okay.
And Ray Winston panics, and so he calls up his mates, which are Tom Wilkinson, who plays a sort of mummy's boy in it, Stephen Delane, who is a very good actor. You may recall him as the policeman in The Parole Officer.
Oh, okay.
The corrupt fella in that.
But anyway, right.
Yes. You may not. And also John Hurt, who is brilliant as Old Man Peanut, who's sort of like... Steptoe's evil twin, just spitting out swear words in a horrible, vile way. Actually, the star of it for me really is one of the supporting cast, which is Ian McShane as the gay one in it. He's this rather flamboyant gay character, and he's brilliant in it. He's just really just smooth, smart, funny. Just really watchable. And the thing about this
is it like Lovejoy had a sort of moment of self-awareness and 20 years
old? Well, there is this bizarre moment where they... Because, as I said, it's all set in one room, pretty much. Mm. And this one room they're in is what to do now they found out that Ray Winston's wife has been cheating on him.
Mm.
And they've kidnapped the lover and put him in a wardrobe. And so we'll basically spend the entire film staring at the wardrobe, going, what should we do with him? Shall we kill him? Shall we not? That's the thing, really. And it's lots of monologues. The cast are brilliant. The cast are just excellent.
Mm-hmm.
But it does look like just monologues. It looks like audition pieces to camera.
Yeah.
Lots of that. So I think from an actor's point of view, I think it's quite interesting.
Right.
But you'll see Ray Winston do 5 minutes straight to camera about how...
Straight to camera?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Oh.
Is he meant to be talking to the other people in the room?
Well, sometimes, yeah, there's sort of dream moments. There's moments where he goes inside his own head. There's moments where he's talking to everyone. There's a lot of it is very heightened... It doesn't play out that naturalistically necessarily. A lot of the lines, it's almost poetic, sort of, particularly when they start bullying the lover, and they're all sort of gang up, just firing insults at him. And there's none of that overlap thing you get in more naturalistic films. It's much more,
line by line.
I would give the words, but we'd have to be rated 18 plus, because it's filthy.
A bit contrived.
It is contrived. It is very contrived, but it does look like a play. I wouldn't be surprised if 10 years from now this is done as a play somewhere.
Why is it called 44-inch chest?
I presume that Ray Winston has a 44-inch chest.
Oh, right.
He's a big man.
He's a big man.
Something to do with the white.
No, 44-inch chest.
Chest
is...
That's never mentioned.
Okay.
44-inch chest isn't that big.
No, I don't know.
It's quite big.
Maybe it's the guy who's the... I don't know.
I'm like 42-inch chest.
Is that what they're trying to put him into? Like just a box? Cut him
there isn't
pieces,
a box. No, there is no none of that. It's the guy, it's the directors who did, sorry, the writers who did Sexy Beast with Ray Winstone years ago.
Okay.
So it's that's the sort of background we're looking at here, really. But no, there is a moment, there's a flashback moment where Ian McShane's saying about the night he had last night, and it went out, and he's recounting this, and you see him in a casino, and it's about how he won £10,000 and all that. And he's recounting it, but the him in the story that we then see being played out keeps on looking to the camera whenever there's an opportune moment, like, and so I rolled the dice, and he looks at the camera. And it's like Lovejoy. It's literally like they got him on set and just said, can you do your Lovejoy thing?
Yeah, do your Lovejoy, but a bit gayer.
Exactly, yeah. But it works really well. You're watching it going, they should bring back Lovejoy. They really should.
They really should.
It was, no, I thought he
sorry,
was...
Sorry, for anyone who doesn't know the show Lovejoy, Ian McShane of, what was the Western thing he was in?
Yeah,
oh, Deadwood.
Deadwood. Yeah. And other stuff. He's become more and more famous since. In the 80s...
90s.
He played a sort of slightly dodgy but lovably dodgy antique dealer called Lovejoy,
bit of a rogue,
who would often look to camera and have a few words to camera.
Yeah.
And it was a British institution.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sadly, no longer with us. But yes, it was that character. There are probably clips on YouTube. I'm sure. Look for Lovejoy.
Yeah.
So, but is it good overall?
Really, I think it doesn't really work as a film. That's the problem.
No. Yeah. It sounds like such a good cast.
It's a brilliant cast. The cast are just faultless. I think the idea behind it is just a bit too limited, really.
I think I'd be more keen to see that at the moment than Edge of Darkness.
I would. Yeah. I'd rave it.
From the sound of it, it's a more interesting sounding film.
I'd recommend it over Edge of Darkness. I think you'd still walk away going, there were flaws in it because of just how they decided to make it like a play, really. And you think, you're going to make it like a play. Why not make a play?
Mm.
But the performances are excellent. And yeah, really good cast doing what they do best.
So, might give it a go then.
Worth a look.
Yes.
So that brings us on now to In This Week in Movie History.
Yay!
Jen's looking at me in a slightly concerned way.
You're going to win again.
You may be concerned because it's difficult this week.
Oh dear.
Oh great. Fantastic.
Okay. Buckle up. Here we go. What's the month? Is it January? It's January.
It has been January. End of January.
It's
January going to February. So it's end of January, early February stuff.
Okay.
I had to ask because it's only got the numbers here of the dates.
Oh,
I was. Is it March? Is it December? I've no idea where we are. January 29th, 1952.
I'm not looking.
She is.
I'm not
sir.
I'm not looking.
You can look because you might.
If I looked, it'd be better.
You can't read anyway.
It's true. You still get it wrong. No offence.
It's pictures.
Some offence. Yeah, January 29th, 1952, 1,800 kilometres into their cross-continent motorcycle journey, Ernesto Guerrera and Alberto Granado continue their journey after seeing Ernesto's lady friend, Chichina.
Ta-ching. That's going to have to be The Motorcycle Diaries.
Indeed.
Which I've never seen. It's apparently stunning.
Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah. It's a good film. It's a very good film. I highly recommend it. January 30th, 2002, Flight 180 explodes due to a premonition.
Final destination.
Yes,
it's not called destination.
The first one.
Okay,
final destination.
I'm going to give Jen that point because she clearly knew it, even if she
couldn't remember what it was called.
No, I knew what
which
it
is
was
the
called.
Point of the film. You thought it was called Bidjabut Destination.
Let's try again.
Film. It's my pet name for it.
We'll try. We don't get this back chat university challenge. January
31,
January 31st, 2003. Kimberly Corman has a vision of a horrid pileup. And saves
Final
the lives of
two.
People. Yeah.
No, you're just getting further and further down the syllable line. You can't just go two. That doesn't count.
It's the second of a film. Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Another point.
Okay,
February 1st, 2005. Charlie Bucket and four other children.
Charlie in the Chocolate Factory.
Indeed.
Oh.
Indeed.
Yeah, I wouldn't have got that one.
You wouldn't have got that one.
I needed a bit more.
Even if I mentioned the next bit about visiting the chocolate factory.
That might have worked.
You've got that bit.
That might have worked.
Dull.
February 2nd, 1992, weatherman Phil Connors kills himself, rescues strangers, steals the groundhog, and eventually seduces his producer boss, indeed.
Phil Connors. Sorry.
Classic film. Still classic.
So that's brilliant. Like Groundhog Day this week. Hooray! Yay. Happy Groundhog Day, everybody! Actually, I think in the paper, they're going to try and stop it. Because
they say it's cruel to... cruel to the groundhog.
Dragging this groundhog down.
Oh, goodness sake.
Anyway,
political correctness gone mad.
It is, isn't it?
It's not like skin it every year.
Well, that'd be great. There you go. Thanks to Peter's idea, we're now going to skin it.
Depending on the size of coat we can make from this groundhog, it determines how much more winter we've got left.
You won't get the next film because I didn't know this was a film.
Okay.
But it's just worth knowing because that is February 2nd is Groundhog Day. Mm-hmm. February 3rd is the day that music died. You know, as in the song, 1959, February 3rd, day the music died, the plane crash takes the life of Buddy Holly, Richie Valens, and J.D. Richardson. And that's from a film called La Bamba. But anyway,
I did know. I wouldn't have got the title.
Yeah.
No, but I knew there was a film of it.
Oh, okay.
It's my job to know this stuff.
So that's that.
Hey.
Do I win?
Yes.
No.
Yay!
No.
Prize. And your prize, Jen, is you can review the next film, Daybreakers.
Oh, yay. Yeah, this is actually one that I've seen.
Ooh. Hurrah, which makes reviewing it that much easier. Yeah. So have we all seen this?
We have.
Oh, excellent.
Let us wax lyrical forthwith.
Fair enough.
I don't know what that even means, but let's talk about it.
I think you want to talk about something.
Yeah, okay, good. So Daybreakers, vampire film.
Yeah.
Yes. And quite an unusual vampire film. Mm. Well, not massively unusual overall, but it's the first time, I think it's the first time, I've never seen this world before.
No, when vampires have taken over.
Yes.
And so there's only a few humans left.
It's a vampire-run world completely, and humans are on the run.
But the nice thing is, rather than it being sort of like underworld, sort of heightened stuff, it's all how vampires live in a day-to-day
life. Yeah, it's just sort of a day-to-day, them going to offices, and they built UV-protected tubes and sort of subwalks.
Subwalks, yeah.
So there's lots of underground stuff.
And, of course, the blood shortage, you know.
Yes.
What would happen if vampires did rule the world? You run out of blood, you wouldn't go out in daylight. It's these little things.
Well, that was slightly bizarre, because you see sort of adverts for how to equip your car for day driving, so you get cameras on it and things like that, which is, it's all very believable. And yet, you seem to see no one driving at all. If anyone is driving in the day, there's like one car on the road.
Yes.
So surely more people.
Because it's still dangerous.
I suppose. It's not like night driving here, where if you crash, you get out and change the tyre.
If you crash, you burst into flames.
Well, and also the fact that if you've spent so long getting used to, you work at night, you sleep by day, you keep on. I presume they sleep. Do they sleep by day? Do the vampires sleep? I don't know.
I didn't even know. I didn't see them sleeping.
No, that's a good point, actually. Given these guys seem to follow the fairly conventional vampire route, they probably do. I think vampires sleep.
Do we see any bedrooms? We saw a few flats. I don't know if we saw bedrooms. We saw kitchens and living rooms.
Yeah.
I don't know if we saw any beds in that.
No, I don't think we do.
Given that lots of people seem to just live where they do since before they got turned, they're probably still in the same place, which has a bedroom.
Exactly. And
they might
as well sleep, even if they don't need to, because they've got nothing else to do by day.
Well, that's true. They're just kicking around the house.
Just watch box sets of True Blood.
But I was also pleased to see these being proper vampires, in that when they get hit by sunlight, you burst into flames almost immediately. I'm getting a bit warm. I mean, it's proper sunlight flames.
So no turning into crystal skinned kind of.
No, none of your
running
sparkly,
slow motion,
angsty rubbish.
Yeah, this is
the anti Twilight.
Yeah, this is the other side. Yeah. To be honest, a lot more sleek and stylish, I think.
And proper, teeth out. Actually, they always have their teeth out. Which is not that unusual.
A bit like your grandma.
Yes.
My grandma's got great teeth. But as in rather than. So I think in Twilight they just kind of flick out. Or they do in True Blood anyway. But I don't know about that. In Angel, in sort of the Buffy Angel thing, it's all sort of face changes. There's none of that. It's just they've got weird eyes and teeth permanently sharpened.
It's basically just living with a condition.
Yeah.
That's what this is.
Well, that's the core of the story, sort of, is whether. How many people who are vampires, whether they want to stay vampires or if they found a cure. We found a group of humans who are working towards a cure to turn people back from vampires, but then lots of the vampires don't want that, even though they're coming up against a blood shortage and they're all going to start. Actually, that was an interesting development. We see that vampires who go without blood for long periods of time become more and more feral, really.
Yes.
And start turning and looking a lot like the Nosferatu era vampire.
I thought that was
sort of
a lovely
wings,
touch.
Sort of developing wings, pointy ears, uncontrollable.
It reminded me, having just seen the Book of Eli, of the Michael Gambon character, and Francis de la Tour character. Of that. Again, that was quite interesting when they appear. Slight tangent, but quite nice.
When you start sort of. Yeah, the power that vampire blood has on vampires. Mm. And it basically gives a vampire something to be afraid of.
Yeah.
Because rather than just, we're a bit hungry, the hungrier they get, the more they start losing themselves. And so would they rather go back to humanity or turn completely into horrible demon vampires? So, and at the core of it all is Ethan Hawke, who is a hematologist, is a vampire, trying to find a fake blood cure.
Mm-hmm.
But then coming up against some resistance from people who don't want fake blood.
Yeah.
Even though they're running out of real blood. So it's a weird.
I thought it was an interesting film. I enjoyed it. But I think actually the world they had imagined was probably the most interesting part of it.
Yes.
And actually the story they chose for it, the Ethan Hawke storyline, was pretty good, but I think the world was actually better than the story was, really, in a way.
Yeah. I'm hoping.
I'm wondering, will they make more? I don't know.
I'd hope so.
It's pretty much set up for it.
Yeah, I mean, because it's not... Yeah, without giving the ending away, it's not... The ending doesn't come down to, hey, we found a magical way to turn the entire world back to humans.
Yeah.
So it's not a clear-cut ending like that.
Mm.
But how it does pan out is sort of quite interesting, with a few different turns.
Yeah, it's... Go on.
I was going to say, so they could easily revisit this world, either with the same people, well, some of the same people, and what they're now doing, or a completely different bit of the world.
Yeah.
But with a different story going on.
Mm. I wouldn't be surprised if we get a Nightbreakers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could work.
Daywatch, Nightwatch.
Daywatch.
Well, Daybreak. Yeah.
Twilight Breakers. Just break Twilight. That's what I want. Yeah.
Ideally. Yeah, but I think it had quite a nice symmetry to it, the fact that it's all about, you know, the challenges of whether people wanted to be vampires in the first place, how they got to become in this situation, family relations between them, like if one turns and the other doesn't. It's and it's got Sam Neill in it. He's
Sam
quite
Neill,
a good
first
bad
I've seen
guy.
Him for a while.
Yeah, he's good. I always like a bit of Neill.
Yeah.
And is it William Dafoe? Rightly sort of dodgy-looking kind of...
Yeah, sort of as an ex-vampire, he's now with the humans. Or he's now human again.
Mm.
So he's now fighting with the humans to try and get a cure.
Is it? I'm wondering, because like Sam Neill and Ethan Hawke and Willem Dafoe and various other guys in this film, are there certain actors who look quite vampiric anyway?
Yes.
I think so. But then every time I see a vampire film and there's someone who is a vampire in it, you think, oh yeah, they look a bit vampire-y. Is it just that if you give anyone pointed teeth and, you know, paint them white and slip the hair back... anyone looks like a vampire, or is it just that they only ever pick the vampire?
I think a little bit, but I'm fairly sure if you gave... Actually, it's going to sound like an insult, it's actually a compliment. Jen, I think you could probably, with pointy teeth, you could be look at you and think, yeah, I was a believable vampire.
I
think give me and Paul pointy teeth, it wouldn't look. We'd just look like weirdos with pointy teeth.
No, you're probably right.
Yeah, we would not be good vampires when the world turns.
True.
Yeah.
I think you look a good zombie, actually, Jen. I can see you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I've done that.
Yeah.
She's not wearing makeup at the moment now, which might be part of
where
that comes from.
Just limbs falling off.
Covered in sores and pustules. And terrible, terrible stench.
Thank you.
I think we haven't done enough mocking.
I didn't want to mention it, but I had noticed that there's some of it.
Too nice lately. Well, yeah.
So, anyway. Going back to Daybreakers and away from Jen.
We have to.
So Daybreakers, I think it's definitely worth a watch. It may still be in cinemas. If not, I think it's definitely worth a rental.
Yeah.
I think it's a great premise,
There's slightly more to it than your average vampire hunting king.
And I particularly say it's good in that, obviously, it's sort of cashing in a bit on the Twilight vampire
thing. Well, current vampire.
But that's no bad thing. They're just making it because it's popular at the minute, vampires. But I think, let's have more of a swing towards your Daybreaker style than your Twilight one.
Please, because New Moon was awful.
And just because it's an original take on Vampire, because it's not Underworld, because it's not sort of your stylized war action-y. I mean, there's a couple of moments of action, but not really.
Mm.
It's just far more, solving a mystery, trying to work out what's going on. Well, not even what's going on, but trying to... Yeah. Yeah, people
and
trying to solve
enough,
a problem.
Enough blood and guts. If you're a horror
fan,
and
there are
that as well,
there are definite gory moments in it, and one or two shock jumpy moments.
They don't take the mick. It's not like it's 18 rated.
No, I think it is 18 rated. Actually,
it might be.
But it's a really well, complete, thought out world.
Basically, it's not too much of one thing or the other. It just treads a nice middle ground and in an interesting way.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yes.
Yay!
If you've seen Daybreakers, why not email us? podcast@moviebanter.co.uk or any other film, email us.
Yes.
Or just email us.
Or tweet us at moviebanter. Or indeed on Facebook. We've got a Facebook fan page as well.
Ooh. It's time for your emails. Email from Johan. Hi, Johan.
Hello.
Yo, Han.
I'm fairly sure you've done that joke before.
Have I?
I think so.
Apologies. If I haven't, I'm sure someone has.
Life
of Johan. Apologies for that. Johan says, hey, gang.
Hey.
Love the last episode. The last ep. Especially your review of The Road. Yes, I read the book before the movie. Loved it a lot. Movie felt was good, but it kind of passed without leaving much of an imprint in my mind. Sherlock Holmes was righteous. I liked Righteous, but
Righteous.
I liked Downey and Law in the film, but didn't like Mark Strong as Lord Blackwood. His acting was a tad bland, but the character was represented in all the right way. Let's hope he'll be better in Kick-Ass.
True. I'm looking forward to Kick-Ass.
Kick-Ass should be fun.
Yeah, if people haven't seen the trailer for Kick-Ass, then seek it out. Okay. You have, Jen. I showed it to you because it has a 12-year-old girl using very colourful language, and you look very shocked.
Well,
we are rather prudish here in the UK.
Yeah.
There's Unflix, best post-apocalyptic film is what we had last week. This week we'll have best Mel Gibson film.
Yes, because right. We'll reappearance on screen.
To the Edge of Darkness, so we'll think on that one. Best post-apocalyptic film was last time, and Johan's going for Children of Men. Always highly praise the film, or indeed the scenes in the first Terminator film that showed Los Angeles in 2018.
Yes.
Hmm.
So there you go. That's thank you to Johan for that.
Yes, now I can count on it, especially Children of Men. Terminator, it's hard to, because now you watch it and it doesn't quite match up.
Yeah.
It is futuristic and you've still got machines flying over, but just the effects are now a bit dated.
Yes.
But the overall impression is still good.
Yeah.
James Cameron knew his stuff even then.
He did, rather.
I've also got an email from Super Toys saying, okay, this is an official lashing of the Movie Banter crew. Come on, folks, you're telling me you don't have access to YouTube? You still complain you don't know who Julia Child is?
Oh.
We do. We've seen YouTube. And it's not, in a slightly callous way, it's not that we can't picture who she is.
No.
We've seen the videos. It's just that we don't care.
We don't care.
It's not. I mean, I'm sure she's a much-loved institution there.
It's like when you film about Delia Smith. Just don't care.
Yeah, and if someone did a brilliant Jamie Oliver impression, which you may know who he is, but we may... The thing is, we wouldn't think it was.
I think it's different that we have seen the impersonation first.
Mm.
As you know, if you grown up knowing this person and then you see someone portraying it, oh, fair enough, well done. Mm. But if you see someone doing an impression, you go, oh, but it is like them. Let me show you the clip, and you go, well, it is. But still, when I saw it, I was still thinking,
It's a perfectly decent performance, but it's just not. I don't feel it's award worthy just because it's a good impression.
Anyway, we
digress.
The debate will continue.
Anyway, he says, hop on the Google and let him find some clips. Well, we did, but we'll have to agree.
Thank
to
you for giving us the link.
Well, yes. Anyway, in other ramblings, well, I got nothing else. Might watch Halloween 2 tonight. I'll report back. We haven't heard from him since. Maybe you got scared to death. I haven't seen either of the Halloween remakes, so I'm hoping. Anyway, he said, love to hear the Banter Crew's review of Labyrinth, an oldie but goodie. Hope it's as loved in the UK as it is in the US.
Love it.
I think we can hand over to Jen on this one.
Jen, our Labyrinth expert here.
What, right now?
Only briefly.
David Bowie in tights.
David Bowie.
You're not selling me.
No, it's just a great production. I think it's from Jim Henson's company.
Yeah, it's
a wonderful mix of... puppeteering and a great fantasy film written by Terry Jones. It's just, it's such
a
beautiful
Terry Jones,
film.
Was it?
Yes.
Who went to our school?
He was head boy of our school.
It all links back, didn't it?
And Jennifer Connelly, when she was, I think, too young to find attractive.
Absolutely. She was about 14 or 12, 14 at the time. But
she's old enough to find attractive now. That's the important thing.
But it's a lovely, lovely, warming, charming, great
film. With the staircases that go all over the place.
Yes, and the baby that just defies gravity. It's amazing.
Yeah,
really, really
lovely
film.
You're thinking about Trainspotting now, Jen. You've got confused.
I'm really not. Very different from Trainspotting.
Email from Blair. Blair says, hello, banterers.
Hello.
Hello. Unless he's misspelled and he actually meant to send that to Antonio Banderas, which is hello. Blair says a couple of quick tweet size reviews for you. So the tweet size, but not tweets, which is
and
that still works.
Nor are they tweet sized because they're good length of views, but Twitter is really too short for reviews.
But that's no bad thing because it trims it all down. Means you just get to the point pretty quickly. So anyway, Blair says, here's a couple of thoughts on films. Fantastic Mr. Fox. Didn't have a problem with the cussing like you guys did, and actually laughed at the term cluster cuss. Now, I haven't seen Fantastic Mr. Fox. You told me about the cussing thing, which I didn't quite agree with. Cluster cuss sounds like a fun term, though.
It was just that would be hilarious.
Yeah, but it's overused. And cuss just doesn't sound right.
I think it's an American word, isn't it?
Yeah.
They should be saying... Blair says, I found the film very funny, but agree, it's not really a film for the kids, which makes it difficult to tell the sort of audience this film is aimed at.
Exactly.
And also, I can finally tick See Jarvis Cocker as a stop-motion animation off my life's to-do list. You've got a weird to-do list.
Weird. Do we see Jarvis Cocker as a stop-motion animation?
He's in it, and therefore he's presumably a stop-motion.
I don't remember
animation.
No, I think we mentioned this at the time. We need to watch it again.
That's how I really don't want to.
Ooh, you did what you weren't this
no,
anti it's
weird.
You
it's
saw
got,
it?
No, it was...
It's got worse in your memory.
It has. It's deteriorated rapidly in my brain. And also Up in the Air, which actually, we can tie in, because I saw within the week. Yeah. So, I'll tie in as well. But Blair says, when Clooney started narrating, I couldn't help but think the film felt a lot like Thank You for Smoking in its tone. Then at the end credits, realised the film shared a director. Yes, Jason Reitman. Yes.
Yeah.
Good mix of humour and warmth, and whilst I think it was given a little too much awards talk ahead of time, though an admittedly slim field this year, it's certainly one of the more pleasing films this year. No, I have to agree about Up in the Air. In that I think it may be talked up a bit too much in terms of award people saying, oh, it's the best film you ever see. But I did really, really, really enjoy it. Although, weirdly, without going into the ending, or but let's just say, because it's about people getting fired a lot in the film, it's... So two of the people I saw it with said it was really depressing, and I didn't find it depressing. I found it sort of uplifting, but I think it was just kind of opposite sides of the same coin, if that makes sense. Or we took, you know, because we all saw the same thing, we just took different messages from the film. But it's George Clooney being a man who is hired by companies to fly to their offices and fire people because if they're too wussy to do it themselves, really. Well, it's not quite that, because we find out that he works with kind of an employment agency as well. So they go along and say to people, I'm afraid you're no longer needed here. Here's your severance package, and you get a year's worth of our services to help you find a new job. So it's not just sort of callous turning it, you're fired, and off he goes.
Well, so he'd be good at that, because he's a charmer, isn't he? You could take him, yes. Clooney. You
know? Which is also the sort of the message of the film, because he gets paired up with a sort of young up-and-comer who has an idea to just sit people in front of a computer monitor. They're all sitting in the office back in different state, and just via a webcam say, sorry, you're fired. Oh. Yeah, there's a package on the desk.
How impersonal. Off you
go. Well, exactly. And so he's disagreeing. He said, oh, you don't know what my job's like. So they go on the road together. And occasionally, and he bumps into, I think earlier in the film, a female traveller who's sort of much like him, floating from place to place. And they strike up the beginnings of a relationship, but they can only ever meet once in a while, whenever their schedules meet. So he's sort of starting a relationship with this woman while also trying to string along the young up-and-coming woman to teach her the ropes. And, yeah, it's basically a journey of self-discovery for him, partly training someone else, partly going from a man who's always on the move. I think he says something like he travels 300 out of 365 days, has a flat which he just is never in. And then he sort of meets someone and starts to think, oh, maybe do I want to settle down with this person? Is that actually where life's taking me? So, yeah, and then... Yes, the film develops from there. But it's very, very funny, but also very touching and sad and happy and a proper range of film emotions, really. And George Clooney does pin it all together, because there's none of the other... I mean, I can't remember the young actress's name, but she's very Amy Adams-esque.
She's in Twilight, isn't she?
Yes, yes, she is.
She's one of the normal people.
Yes. But neither of them are particularly big names. The other two actresses in it, Jason Bateman plays his boss, but we don't see much of him. J.K. Simmons plays someone getting fired, who's very good, but doesn't have much to do. So it's really George Clooney's film, and he does hold it all together brilliantly. And I think it'll get nominated for quite a few Oscars. Well, for a couple of Oscars, but probably won't win.
Yeah, no. It doesn't look like an Oscar film.
No, but it's been nominated for different awards. I think it was in the Golden Globes and others, but it's not. I don't think it's quite there. I think it'll be slightly outpaced. Really, but like it is very, very good.
Yeah. I'd like to go and see that one.
I'd like to see it as well.
I'd willingly go and see it again.
Oscar nominations are out tomorrow, I believe.
Oh, really?
Tomorrow or the day after.
Ooh.
So, yeah. So we're just, unfortunately,
just going to miss
our chance to tell you what we think of them. But come next time, we'll have had a good week or two to digest the information and give our predictions properly.
Tell them why they're wrong.
Exactly. So, yes, interesting to see.
Yes. I think that may be the lot.
I think
almost.
That's a lot. That's
pretty
a
much.
Lot. Yeah. No, it's a slightly shorter one this week, but then, you know, that's... Short and sweet. We can put it out there to the banteries as well, maybe.
That's true,
maybe,
yes. Let us know your preferred length.
Yes, so to speak.
I almost did that with a straight face.
we thought over an hour, sometimes going a bit long for a podcast.
Yeah. But then now we're doing every 2 weeks.
Exactly.
An hour.
I want to give you value for money, which is free, so be grateful for
it. Frankly, we could just swear into a microphone for 4 hours, and that's still value for money.
Exactly.
But not really.
Who would you with knobs on? Sorry, anyway.
He didn't mean it.
No, I didn't mean
he
it.
He did. Oh, you see the viciousness in his eyes. But let us know your thoughts on content and length.
And as ever, we close off with the national anthem. But before that, Desert Island Flicks.
Standing at salute.
Exactly.
Which is the best Mel Gibson film.
Yeah.
See, now, I could go elsewhere, but I'm going to end up coming back to one that I've
I know
before.
Exactly. I knew
no,
I going to go for a season.
Well, I toyed with Braveheart, historical nightmare though it is. It's still a good watch. And or even Maverick, I have a soft spot for.
Yeah.
I may go home and watch that today. Because it's just a fun film with a nice Danny Glover Lethal Weapon reference as well.
Oh, yes.
Which ties into Lethal Weapon, which is what I'm actually going to pick, because I can't not.
I see.
Maybe if I can group all four together. But I think the first one is probably still his best, because it's when he was still probably a proper suicidal nutcase, and then he started becoming happy-go-lucky family man in the later films, which doesn't quite work.
The character, we should point
out. Yeah, sorry, the character. No, but I'm talking about... Yeah,
well,
Mel,
he's troubled, but...
Yeah, I'm talking about Mel Gibson's acting abilities. But in the first one, he does have quite a range to do. He sort of makes him... Is his more first big mainstream American film, I think.
Yeah.
And, yeah, he properly traumatised, suicidal, bursting into tears, but believably in his flat, and then trying to make a life and then jumping off buildings.
Yeah.
And no one's sure if he's mental or not. And it's, yeah, it's a good film and
a
good performance.
I've got a question. Is he still Australian?
Yeah.
Well, no, he is. Do you mean the character? Or?
I mean, no, in real life. Mel Gibson himself.
Oh, I see. Is he a...
Because whenever I've heard him interviewed, I think I'm sure now that I don't hear Australian accents anymore. I'm sure
he's been about 20 years
now acclimatised to America.
I think it's probably... Well, like you get Britain and America, so this transatlantic accent. I think...
Yeah.
Well, actually, between America and Australia, he should level out. I don't know how close they are across the Pacific.
Somewhere out about Tonga.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he should have a Tongan accent.
A Tongan accent.
But I don't think he does.
No.
So, no, I'd imagine it's just become quite neutral.
Yeah.
I guess so. Particularly because you adjust your accent compared with where you are and your surroundings.
Yeah.
And he's lived in a palace for the last 20 years and not come out. So he's just now speaking his own language.
Yeah.
And no one can understand
that. Must be why he makes lots of films now.
That's what it is.
Outside in non-English languages, because he doesn't know English.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All of the scripts for Edge of Darkness, he was reading it all phonetically. Didn't have a clue what any of it meant.
He was asking for director's notes in Tongan.
In Edge of Darkness, he does have a weird accent, but it's a Bostonian accent, it's not weird as such, but it's an unusual accent.
Unusual for him, yeah.
But anyway, Lethal Weapon. We've got off topic onto accents. Hmm. So, Lethal Weapon, I'm going with.
Go for that.
Me
or you, Jen?
I think I'll have a go.
You go.
I'll have a go. Well, obviously there's Mad Max, but we have mentioned that recently, haven't we, with dystopian kind of future. Thinking about it, there was also Chicken Run that was really, really good.
Oh, yes.
That was good.
God,
really only good. His voice, but still.
It was still him. Yeah. Still him. But I actually just, kind of want to say Braveheart, but no. So I'm going to go for What Women Want.
Oh, yes.
Because it's a feel-good film. It's got a great soundtrack, as we were mentioning before. And it's a kind of nice idea.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give that a go.
It's slightly misogynist, a little bit, given that What Women Want appear to be just thinking about men and shoes all the time. Which, we joke about, but it's not...
Jen's got a look in her
eyes thinking, it's not entirely untrue.
Well, no, I think I don't take it that seriously. I'm not going to get offended about a general kind of funny film, so... Yeah. I mean, I suppose if I'd really had a bee in my bonnet, I could get picky, but no.
Nah, fair enough. No. You enjoyed it too much.
Yeah.
Mr. Grenzer.
Yeah, well, there's so much choice, isn't there? You could go for Conspiracy Theory, Mad Max 3.
Mad Max 3 just annoyed me.
The really forthcoming film, The Beaver. Have you heard about this?
Yes.
No.
That could be quite entertaining.
It could be quite fun.
Is it directed by Jodie Foster?
Is it? I hadn't, really?
You carry on talking.
Heard the word beaver and thought,
Jodie Foster.
No, the plot of it is he's a CEO of a big corporation who goes a bit mad.
Uh-huh.
Has a bit of a Mel Gibson moment. and decides to start being just... he has a glove puppet of a beaver who just keeps on speaking to him, and he just starts listening to it. And
It is directed by Jodie Foster.
Really?
I wasn't making it up. It's directed by Jodie Foster.
How bizarre.
Sounds a bit like Mr. Hats in...
It is, it is rather. Yeah, rather bonkers. So those are the options, but no, I don't really like any of them.
Really?
Oh, you've got to pick one.
I know, but so I'm to pick the best one, but it doesn't mean that I really like the film.
No, okay. Yeah.
I'm probably going to go for I would go for Braveheart or Chicken Run then.
Uh-huh.
I'd prefer Chicken Run, to be honest.
Because it's the least Mel Gibson-y film.
But Braveheart, I've only seen Braveheart once, actually.
Oh, really? It is.
It does make sense.
It is an epic, and I'm going to go with Braveheart, because in terms of, defining moments of the career and all that, blue face paint and all that, let's go with Braveheart.
Yes. I think it does deserve... an honourable.
Yeah, I mean, it may get occasionally mocked for you. It's not a historic, it's not true to history. But then, what films are?
Yeah,
but as a just a film
it's a
in its own
film.
Right. Yeah, it's a hell of a watch.
Yeah. So there you have it.
Yeah, there you go.
That's it.
But let us know your Mel Gibson favourite moments.
Yeah.
At podcast@moviebanter.co.uk.
And any thoughts about films or other things?
Anything else really? Yeah. What have you gone shopping for this week?
Exactly.
No, best not. Unless it's actual films.
Best.
That's probably better. But I think that's your lot.
So,
thank you for listening.
Thank you for coming.
Shut the door on the way out.
Exactly. Yes. be gone with you.
Exactly. Wipe your feet.
Indeed. And we'll see you next time on episode number 59.
Hey.
The big 5-9.
Yes.
Everybody looking forward to it.
Yes.
And now we're finally there.
So we shall see you in a couple of weeks.
Will do.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.